Hello, friends. Welcome to another program of Two Guys with Heart, with Giff Briner and Dave Colonen. These two fine Christian gentlemen will do their very best to bring encouragement to your faith. We all undergo difficulties throughout our lifetime. How do we respond, and what is the correct direction that we should take? Giff and Dave will give it their best shot to guide our lives through the work and words of Jesus. And now, here they are, Two Guys with Heart.
Good afternoon, friends. Hey, it's Giff Briner here. Another program of Two Guys with Heart. Me and my very special friend,
Dave Colonen.
Dave, we have a good program lined up for our listeners today.
You got
today.
Some more stories yes, again today?
Yes, we do. And I think it's fascinating. I like to read about other people's thought process and what makes them click and how they get through this good old world and what are their ups and downs and how can we learn from them. And the first one I started off with, boy, it really hit me on the head, because it's a story about two ladies, sisters, that are 100 years old. Now, isn't that fascinating?
Well, that's a story already. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. Lay it on me.
Well, I like the story about these Delaney sisters, Sadie and Betsy. These two sisters are telling us some of the do's and don'ts and what they did to live to be so old. And Sadie wrote this. She said, "For us, there was never a time when we did not believe in God. There's a lot in this good old world that you can't see, and you still have to believe in it, like love and courage. Well, that's the way it is with faith. Just because you can't hold it doesn't mean that it's not there. A person who has faith is prepared for life to do something with it. The Word of God was the center of our home. The Bible is where we go for guidance. God's wisdom is at work in the words. But you can also get plenty of practical advice in the Bible. After all, mankind hasn't changed that much." So Betsy has her own words. Betsy says, "Well, when we walk into our house, whether we're coming back from a long trip or just from seeing the neighbors, the first thing we say is, 'We're home, praise the Lord.' We do that to honor Him, to thank Him for watching over us. I think God understands that I am only human. I give this mouth, and He gave me a temper, and I am bound to err. I'm sure I must be getting credit for trying, but every once in a while, just to keep on His path, I try to keep an old-fashioned fire and brimstone sermon. I'm an Episcopalian, and I appreciate the thoughtful preaching in my church, but there's nothing like fire and brimstone to set me straight. Fight fire with fire, I always say." Well, I like that. Betsy was a feisty lady, wasn't she? Now, Sadie has some other words for us here. She says, "I can't get over the litter on the ground in New York City. People eat a sandwich and they throw the wrapper on the ground. You might think that's the little thing to be provoked about, but it's not a little thing. It shows a lot about the character of a person, that he doesn't care about anyone else. It's just plain bad manners. We hate bad manners. By manners, I don't mean using the right fork or spoon at the dinner table. I'm talking about performing simple acts of consideration, which sound easy, and it is easy, but too few people even bother to try." So Sadie's a little down on this and disappointing that, but here's some nice words from Betsy. "When you get older, it is natural to look back on your life. And like most folks, I have few regrets. The main regret I have from 100 years of living came from when I haven't treated someone as well as I could have. Mama used to tell me, 'Betsy, someday you're going to have to account for every mean thing you've ever said.' That's what got me so worried. If I had to do it over again, I would hush up once in a while." "Listen to your father who gave you life, and do not despair your mother when she is old." Proverbs chapter 23, verse 22. You're right, David. You always like to reference Proverbs when it comes to solutions to headaches and problems of this good old world. There's another example where you are correct.
Hey, You know, yesterday I told a story about Jay Leno and the Pope and the
president. Yeah, I remember
president.
That. That was funny.
The guy was trying to impress that he knew everybody in the world, and they finally even put him to the test and offered to pay the airfare to get him to Rome to see if he really did know the Pope. Quite a story, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
It made me think, and we didn't have time. We ran out of time. Had to leave. There was a time when I was pastor in the church in Davenport, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
My associate, I finally hired him. He was my son-in-law. He'd grown up, but he hadn't been around us very much. He hadn't even been around the Couriers all that much, just here and there. And on Sunday morning, we were sitting at the platform waiting for the service to start, and he said to me, he said, "Dave, you know that the Oak Ridge boys are in town tonight at the auditorium." I said, "Oh, yeah, I know those guys." He said, "You do?" I said, yeah. "Oh, you don't know really the Oak Ridge boys? You know them?" I said, "Yeah, I know them." He didn't know that I'd sung with them maybe 50 times.
Oh, wow. Oh, you really did?
Yeah, we traveled the country together for a while. I had a great time. And so I said, "Look, we'll cut the service short tonight, and you and me, we'll go down and see if we can say hi to the Oak Ridge boys." So we did. We closed the service early. We got in our car, and we drove down to the auditorium. There was two big buses there, one for the orchestra and one for them. We got out of our car, and we started walking around. The concert was already in operation, and everybody was in. We were walking around the buses, and I was trying to tell them a little bit about, you know, how we ran. We used to have a bus like this, and this is what we did. And finally, the bus driver of the Oak Ridge boys got out of the bus and came out and said, "Hey, what are you guys doing walking around the buses? What are you up to?" I said, "We know the guys. We know the Oak Ridge boys." "Oh, yeah, everybody says that." I said, how can we get to meet them and to show you that I know who they are?" "Well," he said, "when the concert's over," he said, "this back door back here where all the policemen are lined up. When the concert's over, they'll come out that door, and the policemen will guard them all the way to their bus. And if you stand right here, I'll show you where to stand. You can yell out to them, and if they know you, they'll say, 'Hey, come on in.' If they don't know you, they'll ignore you and go right on in the bus and shut the door." So we waited, the concert was over, the back door opened, and out came the Oak Ridge boys, and the policemen all lined up, and they come down right where Greg and I were standing. And I said, "Hey, how you doing, guys?" They turned around, looked at me, and said, "Dave, come on in the bus." And the old bus driver, he's standing there, he's looking at me saying, "Well, okay, you win."
So you're okay all of a sudden, huh?
Joe worry. The tenor, he was a boy that we'd known for, man, 50 years.
Yeah.
And
so you did sing with the Oak Ridge boys, huh?
Oh, a lot of times. We did the program together. We did a whole trip from Toronto to Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
And all Canadian cities.
Wow, that was 3,000 miles?
Yep. And it was only the Oak Ridge and us. We get to Toronto, and we get to the program, and the promoter says, "Dave, you and the Couriers, you're first." And he said, "Then we'll have the intermission, and then the Oak Ridge will have the rest of the night." And I thought to myself, that's crazy. That we'll be in intermission selling our tapes, and the Oak Ridge haven't even sung yet. Yeah. That'll be good for us. So we went out and we sold everything that we had almost, and the Oak Ridge boys, then it was their turn to sing.
Uh-huh.
Well, the next night, second night, I said to the guys, I said, "It's not going to happen the same like last night. It will not go like that." And sure enough, Joe came to me and said, "Hey, same as last night." We did 12 days with them all the way across Canada and down the West Coast.
Uh-huh.
We had more fun, and we were first for the whole trip.
Really?
We did better on that trip. We broke all of our records.
Sold everything we had.
I mean, we really wiped them up.
How about that?
At the end of the tour, all of us were saying goodbye, shaking hands, and all that. And I just said out loud, "Hey, how about doing it again next year?" And they all said, We are kissing you goodbye. Don't ever come back to us. I don't know if we ever sang again with the Oak Ridge Boys.
That
they,
did, huh?
We'd beat them up so much for 12 days that they didn't want to see us ever.
That's a funny story.
That's my little story.
That's a funny story. Yeah, that's good. I had some dealings with the Oak Ridge Boys, too.
You're kidding.
Well, maybe a little bit, because my Oak Ridge were out of Oak Ridge National Laboratories in Knoxville, Tennessee. I worked for the Navy. We had some contracts with them. But there was Oak Ridge, so we called them the Oak Ridge Boys, but that's as close as I can get. Oak Ridge National Laboratories. Oh, boy. Well, Dave, I have some other great stories here. I like your stories. They're always fascinating and humorous. Let me see if I can give you one. It might be a little different. San Francisco had more than its share of colorful characters. Among those in the last century was a strikingly handsome man who was called the Great Unknown. He was tall, erect, slender, with jet black hair, and was clean-shaven at all times when most men wore beards or mustaches. His dress was absolutely impeccable. He wore a top hat that was always brushed and clean. His boots were always polished. He was aloof, mysterious, never talked with anyone. Nobody knew his name, his origin, his occupation, or where he lived. Rumors had it that he was an exile, nobleman, or former diplomat, but no one really knew. Well, one day he was missed from his normal afternoon appearance in the downtown district. His habit was to walk through the downtown district for about 2 hours each evening and then disappear. Well, some days later, his body was found in a tiny loft by the waterfront. He lived humbly and was discovered that he made his living by stuffing pillows and mattresses. The room was sparse, but absolutely clean. His clothing was still immaculate. His boots were arranged in military fashion. On his dressing table was a wig of jet black hair. On the crude bed was the body, the handsome face frozen by death. His hair and beard were snow white. Whatever his secret, it died with him, and he remains the Great Unknown. He was buried in a pauper's grave with no one claiming the body. Why did he attempt to be somebody he was not? Was he afraid that people might reject him as a pillow stuffer? Did he have some deep, dark, ugly secret about his past that he wanted to keep hidden? Did he crave recognition? All of us want to be accepted and admired. But when we know ourselves better than anybody else, how many of us can say we have lived a deception? How many of us have secrets we'd rather keep to ourselves? Jesus Christ came to set us free from deception. He came to make us sons and daughters of the King. No longer are we slaves to the past or servants of secrets. We have been accepted by Jesus Christ himself. For the first time, we can look at others without suspicion or fears of deception or defense. You see, in Christ, we can be free to love and experience the great joy of living that comes from a clear, clean conscience. Know ye that the Lord is God. It is he that has made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people, and the sheep of his pasture. Psalms 100, verse 3. Kind of a heartwarming story. And I guess everyone must have some kind of a secret. But if you live that secret and nothing else, that's a secret, that's a life of deception.
Yep.
Well, you can't hide from Jesus. Good story.
Thank you. Thank you, Giff.
Mm-hmm.
Some years ago, during the pioneer days of aviation, when things were new and the flight was in its infancy, things were pretty crude. The technology of our day was unheard of. There were problems and dangers which present no problem to us today, but they did then. With that background, take this little story and see if it makes sense. A brave pilot was making a flight around the world in one of those earlier crudely built airplanes. It was built with a wooden frame, fabric covered the frame, very fragile. On this particular leg of his journey, he had been in the air about 2 hours since his last landing when he heard a noise in the airplane. He looked around, curious, and then was alarmed when he recognized it was the gnawing of a rat. He realized that while the plane had been on the ground, a rat had gotten in the plane somehow. The danger of the rat was that it could easily gnaw through a vital cable, a control line. It was a serious, serious problem. What to do? He was anxious and concerned, and he was about 2 hours from his next landing strip. Perhaps we can appreciate his dilemma. He tried to think of a solution as he flew his little plane. Then it dawned on him. The rat was a rodent. It was not made for airplanes and heights. It was made for the ground and underneath the living things. That presented the solution. Therefore, the pilot began to climb until he was flying at an altitude of more than 20,000 feet. Soon the gnawing ceased. The rat was dead. The rat couldn't survive in the atmosphere at that height. More than 2 hours later, the pilot brought the plane safely to the next landing field and looked through the plane until he found the dead rat. Do you want to put that in a focus of today? I think many kinds of rats can kill a friendship.
Yes.
Worry, fear, gossip, anger, lying. How do we rid ourselves of these kinds of rats which gnaw and destroy relationships? The secret. Some things cannot live or breathe in the atmosphere of secret places of the Most High God. Such things die when we ascend to the Lord through prayer, reading His Word, a commitment to follow Him. The major key, things which seek to destroy your friendships can be put aside into perspective in the presence of the Most High God.
Wow.
You got a rat?
Yeah.
Lift your house. Yes, you got a rat in the house? Lift it to 20,000 feet and you'll have no more trouble.
It'll go away. I like that story. Yeah, that is good. Let me lighten up your heart a little bit. I want to read one. I like just to tell the stories, but if you read one every now and then, you have to. But I'd like to give somebody credit for whoever wrote this little poem, but I don't know. So I just have to confess that it wasn't me. A little poem called My Get Up and Go. Someone must have been about my age who wrote this, because it's for the seniors, I believe. How do you know that my youth is all spent when I get up and go has got up and went? But in spite of it all, I am able to grin when I recall where my get up has been. Old age is golden, so I've heard it said, but sometimes I wonder when I get into bed. My ears in a drawer, my teeth in a cup, my eyes on the table when I wake up. The sleep dims my eyes, and I say to myself, is there anything else I should lay on the shelf? And I'm happy to say, as I close my door, my friends are the same, perhaps even more. When I was young, my slippers were red. I could kick up my heels right over my head. When I grew older, my slippers were blue. But still, I thought through the dance I could dance the night through. Now I am old, my slippers are black. I walk in the store and puff my way back. The reason I know my youth is all spent, my get up and go has got up and went. But I really don't mind when I think with a grin, all of the grand places my get up has been. Since I have retired from my life's competition, I busy myself with complete repetition. I get up each morning and dust off my wits, pick up my paper and read the obits. If my name is missing, I know I'm not dead, so I eat a good breakfast and go back to bed.
All right.
That's
all
a
right.
Fascinating story. I like that. I didn't write it, but it is very nice. David, we still have a few minutes left. Yeah, I hope you have another good story to share with us.
On the New England coastline.
All right.
A number of years ago, a ship was wrecked in one of the many storms that lashed at that area. Large crowd gathered on shore to help rescue. The lifeboats were launched into the raging turf, and soon they began coming back to shore with all the survivors. One of the rescuers shouted over the noise of the storm to the captain, "Was everybody rescued?" The captain replied, "Everybody but one. There was one man out there we just couldn't wait for. He'd fallen off the ship, and it was ready to go down. The last time we saw him, he was holding on to some of the wreckage." John Holden said to the captain, "Let's go back and find him." But standing next to John Holden was his mother. And she said, "John, have you forgotten that your father went down 4 years ago and was drowned, and that your brother Will went out to sea months ago, and we haven't seen him since? You are all that I have left. I beg of you not to go out there to look for that other man." John said, "Mother, I must. There's a man out there who needs saving." He and the captain got into the flimsy rowboat. It didn't look good. The storm was still raging. And as the mother watched her son John and the captain make their way out into the ocean, she turned aside to weep with a broken heart, convinced that her last loved one would be lost. Several hours passed with the anxious crowd still assembled in the wind and the rain. They huddled together in the quietness. The mother still wept and was tempted to comfort her. Everybody wanted to help her. Some stood just as curiosity seekers. Finally, someone spotted that little lifeboat making its way back to shore. "Did you find the man?" John Holden up and shouted back from the little boat, "Yes, we found the man. Tell my mother the man is well." Her other son was found on the sea that day. What a reunion was had by all. What if John had not gone back for the lost man? Aren't you glad that Jesus Christ is still seeking after the lost? And if you are one that doesn't believe in Jesus, he's still coming back for you in the storms of life until he hopes you'll find church, you'll find Jesus, you'll find a way of life that will be beneficial. "I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture." That's the story of someone who was lost forever.
That's a heartwarming story. And, you know, when the souls are lost, we always wonder, you know, where do we go wrong? How do we get them back? And actually, what history has taught us, that is, if you don't get them within the first 13 years of their life, your chances are very slim of getting them. I would encourage all of our listeners to make sure your children and your grandchildren find their way to church every Sunday morning. It is so critical that they hear the good news and the love of Jesus Christ. If you wait too long, you're going to fall into that category of the story that Dave just read of a lost soul. Our secular world that we live in is getting further and further away from the truth all the time. So we ourselves, our Christians here today, must step forward and make sure that the next generation understands of the power and the love found only in Jesus Christ, our Savior. David, my friend, we must say goodbye for now. We have exhausted our time. I hope our listeners have found something informative, something entertaining, something funny, and something to stimulate their lives to live by. For now, we have to say goodbye.
Great to be with you, Giff. It's been a wonderful day. See you next time. Bye-bye.